One day, when I was a kid, my mother lost her wedding ring. She had been cleaning something and had carefully taken it off and set it on a dresser. And later, when she went back for it, the ring was gone, nowhere to be found. We turned the house upside down searching for it. This was a special piece. It had been fashioned for my grandmother's wedding band. But it had vanished. And then something really odd happened. My brother had gone to a school assembly right after the incident, and one of the speakers was a psychic. The psychic was reading the auditorium, and she said, "Somebody here has lost something very valuable. You will find it in the place where you keep your spices." So that afternoon, we emptied out the kitchen cabinets and unloaded the cinnamon and the dried oregano and the expired Old Bay seasoning, and oh my gosh, nothing. The ring wasn't there. I know, it's such an unsatisfying conclusion. In fact, my mother never found that ring. But my father replaced it with something a lot nicer, so I guess it all worked out. But what's always stayed with me is what an odd coincidence the whole thing was. I mean, maybe the psychic was just an entertainer. Or maybe, if there had been a private session, her radar would have been sharper. Oh, sorry, not the spices. I meant where you keep the cereal. Maybe being psychic, or intuitive, or whatever you want to call it, is just living in a heightened state of knowing. Let's imagine for a moment, two people. One of them spends all day scrolling through social media, while the other refuses to get online. That first person, the connected person, would seem to know things about people. Lots of things. Personal things. It might even seem magical to the one who never looks at a screen, but in fact, they just have access to more data. Frankly, I wouldn't mind being the Luddite in this example, the person blissfully living life without this constant stream of information. And I'm glad I'm not psychic either, because there are lots of things I don't want to know. And sometimes, maybe we're better off not knowing. I'm Christopher Wynn, and this is Strange. You may not know Stephen Tobolowsky's name, but you definitely know his face. I promise. He's what Hollywood calls a character actor. And he's played a lot of them. From needle-nosed Ned in the Bill Murray comedy Groundhog Day to a washed-up music director in Glee, Stephen's curmudgeon face and voice are unforgettable. He's also written two books, The Dangerous Animals Club and My Adventures with God. But long before he became a celebrity, Stephen realized he had a very different talent, an odd and sometimes frightening talent. Put simply, he heard things. Here's Stephen.
This was a surprise to me, too. And the whole thing is still unexplained. Just know that I have absolutely no explanation as to what happened. But I kind of was in college at SMU. I was a sophomore, so that meant I was like 19 years old. And I was in love with this freshman girl named Beth.
And
And I had absolutely no idea how to ask her out on a date. Because when you're in, you know, the theater department, you're together all day, all the time. So I would see her for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and at scene shop and at rehearsals. But, you know, I wanted to see her in some other way outside of the school framework where maybe I could kiss her. This is a real dangerous period in American history. The Woodstock generation had happened, but we were both virgins. And it was very difficult to be a virgin back then. So I was a sophomore, which meant I could take real theater classes. And one of the theater classes was movement, whatever that was. So our movement teacher told us that for the beginning of the year, we were going to have a very special movement class out by the lake, about 2 hours outside of Dallas. We would do yoga stretches and movement, and then we would do spiritual exercises around the fire. And everybody loved this idea. I did not. It sounded to me like we were doing the same crap we were doing all the time at school, except we were doing it closer to bugs and farther away from nice toilets. So we go out to this lake, we do yoga stretches. In between the yoga stretches and the spiritual exercise, several members of my class snuck off into the weeds to do something which was clearly illegal in the state of Texas. They were smoking away. You could smell the pong of Mary Jane. I did not smoke. I did not drink at the time, which is very important for understanding this story. So we're sitting around the fire, and imagine it's a clock, and my teacher is at 12 o'clock. I'm at 6 o'clock, and all the other students are filling in around here. The teacher told us to hold hands and om. He says, take a deep breath, let it out. Breathing, by the way, as a historical note, was considered an exercise in the 1970s. So we're all holding hands, and the teacher says, we're going to go around the fire, and I want you to say the first thing that comes to your mind. So the first student goes, Hobbit. The next student goes, Frodo. The next student goes, Gandalf. The next student says, Hobbit. The next student says, he just got my word. And our teacher said, well, don't filter, just say the first thing in your mind. She said, Hobbit. So we all start relaxing when we see how low this bar is. I still have no idea what I'm going to say. Someone said weed, I think, and everyone started giggling. And the teacher says, everyone, calm down. This is serious. And they get to me, and for some reason, I hear this tone, this noise in my head. And I opened my mouth, and I looked across the fire at our teacher, and I said, I get that you're not who you say you are. And he looked at me and said, what do you mean, Stephen? I said, I get that your name is not your name, that you have an assumed name, and your initials are MK or ML. And he goes, very good, let's keep going. And then the next person goes, Frodo, and the next person goes lake, and next person says beer and stars and so on and so forth. And we all adjourn for the night. Now, I decide not to spend the night there and be food for the mosquitoes, but I'm going to drive back to Dallas, and I'm heading out to my car, and coming out of the shadows is my teacher, and he stops me, and he says, Stephen, why did you say what you said when we were going around the fire? I said, I don't know, sir. You said, say the first thing that came to your mind. That was the first thing that came to my mind. He says, because it's true. Now, I'm going to ask you again. How did you know that I have a different name? I said, I don't know. I just heard this sound in my head and said what I wanted to say. And he said, my initials are MK, just like you said. Is there something you want to tell me? And I go, no, sir. He says, Stephen, has anyone ever done psychic experiments with you? Yeah, right. This is the age of Vietnam. No, we had not understood the notion of psychic experiments at this point in time. So I said, no, sir. He said, well, sometime at my house, I have a Japanese prayer stool, which is a powerful instrument of psychic connection. Maybe we could try some experiments with it. I go, sure. Anyway, it turns out that this movement teacher was my director for one of the first acting roles I got at SMU, a serious acting role where I had lines. And it was in the Imaginary Invalid, and my girlfriend, the girl I wanted to be my girlfriend, Beth, was in the play as well. So this was fabulous news. It meant that I would be able to flirt with Beth during the evening as well as all day. It was almost as good as a date. We opened the Imaginary Invalid, and our teacher said we were going to have our opening night party at his house, which was amazing. We went there. It was the first time grown-ups were giving kids alcohol. So we're all standing around drinking. I think I even may have had a beer at this point out of a cup, listening to Paul McCartney singing The Long and Winding Road. And I was getting panicked by the party, and I look over at Beth, and Beth starts making her way over to me. And then my teacher interrupts and said, Stephen, have you thought any more about those psychic experiments? I said, no, sir. He says, because we could set up some time. I have a half a day tomorrow. If you want, you could come over to the house in the afternoon and we could try something with the Japanese prayer stool. And I looked over to Beth. I said, is it all right if Beth comes with me? And he says, sure. And there it was, our first date. Our first date. The next day, after lunch, we drove over to our teacher's house. He pulls out the Japanese prayer stool. He sits cross-legged on one side and asked me to sit down facing him and hold his hands. I was somewhat adverse to holding hands with my teachers, but he was a very nice man, very respectful guy. He said, we should breathe. We took a deep breath. He says, all right, Stephen, tell me if you see anything. Well, I didn't see anything, but I heard something. Again, I hear this noise in my head, just this sound, this multi-tonal polyglot, just like a... I don't know what it was, and I opened my mouth, and I said, well, there's a 5-year-old over by your fireplace, and there's a 40-year-old woman on that telephone in the kitchen. My teacher stood up in a panic, shaking his hands. I said, is something wrong? Is something wrong? He said, I was babysitting for my 5-year-old nephew. He was playing by that fireplace, and I told him it wasn't safe, and he ran out the front door of the house and was hit by a car. And my sister, on her 40th birthday, called me on that telephone in the kitchen that you pointed to and committed suicide on that phone call. Now, at this point, I am freaking out. I am in tears. I didn't know what to think. Beth and I drive home from this event with our teacher, and we stop in front of her dorm, and she says, what do you know about me? And I go, nothing, nothing. I don't see anything. And she goes, stop, no. You didn't say you see something, you say you heard something. Do I make a sound? And I nodded, yes. And she said, hold my hands. Maybe you'll hear it better. And I said, you have 3 tones in the male range. And she says, is that good? I said, I don't know, but they're all in harmony with one another. It may mean that you are sufficient unto yourself. I don't know. It may mean that your intellectual life and your spiritual life are in harmony. And she said, we are going to make a fortune. This is fabulous. We got to do it. Listen, I'll tell you what. We will be a team, you and I. I will get people, bring them to you. You hold their hands and breathe or whatever you do. You listen to the tones. Whatever happens, you tell them whatever you want to tell them, and we'll collect money for it. We could charge people 25 cents a reading, maybe even $1, and we'll split the money 50-50. And I'm thinking, man, this sounds like a partnership. I said, I'm in. So Beth started gathering people in the drama department over to me. I would breathe, we would hold hands, and I would say what the tones. I would just hear noise coming from people. I would open my mouth and speak, and the things came out. Like with one fellow, I hear, there's been a death in the family. You're going to inherit a lot of money, and you are not sure how you want to invest it. He absolutely freaked out, ran out of the room. One girl, I'm holding her hands. I say, you're trying to get over the fact you were molested by your father. This, it was not fun. People started crying. People hated me. They thought it was very weird. And then the more I heard the tones, the more I continued to hear the tones. They intruded everywhere, at restaurants, at movies. I would hear tones coming from everyone. It was making me crazy. So I decided I would stop hearing these tones. And Beth said, she went along with it, and she said, do you want to split up the money? Or if you want, we could just keep it and still be a team. And Beth and I ended up falling in love, and we were together for 16 years. One of the great loves of my life. Now, during this whole period of time in which I insisted I would not hear the tones, I still heard them, but I didn't actively pursue talking about them or anything like that. As it turned out, in our life together, I ended up beginning to work with some success as an actor. Beth found no success until she had a family tragedy in her life. And she wrote a play about it and won the Pulitzer Prize. And so she became famous. Her play ended up on Broadway, ran for 2 years. They made a movie based on it, Crimes of the Heart, was nominated for an Academy Award. Suddenly, you know, Beth is the enormous star, the bright, shining sun of our twosome. And when you are a rising star, you hook up with other rising stars. And one of the rising stars that was interested in Beth was Jonathan Demme, the director. So we would go out to eat Chinese food with Jonathan, and he loved video games. He loved Defender and Space Invaders. And I would go over to his office, and he actually owned, like, the video games. He was that successful. And I thought, this is what I want to be when I grow up. And so Beth and I are leaving what they call Pilates. It was a new thing back then. We were leaving Pilates class, and this car pulls up, and it's Jonathan Demme. And he says, hey, guys, do you want to see my new project that I'm working on? We're doing a rough cut over at the Academy. Sure. So we jump in his car. We drive over to the Academy on Wilshire Boulevard. He was working with the Talking Heads. So we walk into the Academy, which is about a 1,900-seat theater with great stereo. I kind of knew who the Talking Heads were from Burning Down the House or something, but I never really listened to their music. So we sit down in this enormous auditorium with Jonathan, his wife Evelyn, David Byrne sat right behind Beth and myself. Jerry and Chris and Tina, they were sitting down on the front row, and that was it, in this enormous theater. And this was my first real experience with the music of the Talking Heads, which was phenomenal. After the screening, my mind was blown. And we went out to eat with David and with Jonathan and Evelyn, and David got me into a corner, was trying to say what was wrong with the movie. David only wants to hear bad things, but he doesn't want to hear praise. I want to know the bad things so we can fix them. You know, don't give me any praise. I want the bad things. We talked for a couple of hours, and David, during the conversation, asked if Beth and I had a swimming pool. Well, now, since she was the Pulitzer pig, which is what she called herself, we did have a house in the Hollywood Hills with a swimming pool. So I said, yeah, David, we have a swimming pool. He said, well, I'm shooting my video of Road to Nowhere, which is a new song of the Talking Heads, "Can we use your swimming pool?" We go, sure. So David came up, and if you go on YouTube and look at Road to Nowhere, all the scenes in the water and under the water were at our swimming pool up on Woodrow Wilson Boulevard in the Hollywood Hills. David finishes shooting that day, and I start cooking some salmon on the grill for us to have dinner with, and open up a bottle of wine, and David starts talking about a new project he has, what he wants to be a movie called True Stories. And he said when they went out on tour, he loved to read National Enquirer and Weekly World News and all these crazy newspapers that would have insane stories that were still true. Absolutely unbelievable stories of people that were true. And then Beth says to David, well, you should talk to my sweetie because he can hear tones. And I'm like, you know, I hadn't been doing this for 16 years. And it comes out of nowhere. And David said to me, smiling, goes, you hear tones? So I told him the story I told you at the beginning of this podcast. And David found it very amusing. He ended up hiring Beth and me to write the screenplay for True Stories. And we had 19 days to write this screenplay. We turned in our first draft at the end of that time. And then I didn't see or hear from David again for a year. I'm talking about the Earth going around the sun, one complete rotation, not a phone call, nothing for a year. I'm driving through the Hollywood Hills. I'm at a stop sign. Suddenly, I hear a knock on my window. I turn, terrified, and it's David Byrne on a bicycle, and he's knocking on my window, and he's telling me to roll down my window. I do. He says, are you going to be at your house later this afternoon? There's something I need to play you. I go, well, sure, David, sure. So later that afternoon, David came over and said, well, Stephen, I'm sorry we didn't get in touch. I pretty much rewrote everything you and Beth did, but I really like the idea of the tones. So I added a character to the script that hears tones, and here is the song I wrote for the character, and it was the song Radiohead in True Stories. And I cannot tell you how happy hearing that music, besides it being a fabulous song, in a way, it was the beginning of my relationship with Beth, frozen like an insect in amber, with David's brilliant music and lyrics, just absolutely wonderful. The thing that none of us knew, I think True Stories came out around 88, I think something like that. In 1991, the English rock group called On a Friday had a band meeting, and they decided they needed to change the name of their band, and they loved David Byrne, and they loved True Stories, and they loved that song, and so On a Friday changed their name to Radiohead. So, we never know the end of a story. Or the beginning. I always wonder if Thom Yorke ever knew that the name of his band was based on what happened to a very scared 19-year-old sitting around a fire doing spiritual exercises in Texas, hearing something that he really did not understand.
Stephen Tobolowsky has recently added one more thing to his resume, podcaster. He hosts his own show about life, love, and Hollywood called The Tobolowsky Files. I love music. And have been lucky enough to write my own songs. And that act of creation, of merging lyrics and melody, has always felt mysterious to me, almost like a form of channeling. That's why I was drawn to this brief story about an act of creation from the Dallas-based artist known simply as Sudi. Sudi, a self-described mad scientist when it comes to making music, is a producer, a classically trained vocalist, and songwriter. And one of those songs has an unusual and unsettling origin story. Here's Sudi.
So I was sleeping, and I woke up, I guess, like right in the middle of this panic attack. Usually what happens is you get that like almost vertigo feeling and kind of feeling of like coming out of reality and tunnel vision and lightheadedness, and your heart starts racing and it's just unnerving. I woke up thinking that I was dying. I immediately thought I was having a heart attack. I was like, holy shit, this is it. After a minute of like deep breathing and kind of realizing that I was okay, and my heart started slowing down, I wrote the whole song. I just like wrote the lyrics right there. I had a heart attack when I was sleeping. It's about what had just happened. And then, and it went pitter-pat, but I was dreaming. So it felt really real, but you know, it was just because of something in my dream, and I was confused, and then I, you know, woke up to reality. And then I recorded the melody a little bit on my phone, but it wasn't the full song. It was really just the poem, the lyrics that I had written. I was sleeping, so it didn't sound very good. I was just like humming it like, that's probably exactly what it sounds like. I had a heart attack when I was sleeping. So then I go back to sleep and I wake up and my mom's calling me, and you know, I answer the phone, and then she told me that that night, you know, the same night that I had the panic attack and then I wrote the song, that my grandfather had a heart attack. And that like made my stomach just like fall.
You can find all of Sudi's work at sudimusic.com. Strange is produced by me, Jason Reimer, and Jeff Whittington, who also edits the show. Strange was created by me and Jason Reimer. Jason also composed our music. Additional music provided by Talented Friends Productions. You can find all of the details in our show notes for this episode. Our artwork is by Rob Wilson. Additional audio provided by Spoke Media. And special thanks to Edward Medellis. If you like Strange and want to help support this work, please rate and review us wherever you're listening. And tell all of your friends. It helps others find the show. And if you have your own strange story, I want to hear it. Please drop me an email or a voice recording through my website, strangepod.com.